Welcome to the Lake Slugcast, episode 93. We're an open podcast slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, please visit linuxslugcast.com for the server details. We also have a Mumble how-to on the site explaining how to configure Mumble. Then just join us in Linux Slugcast room. During the live show, if you are unable to join us in Mumble, you can listen to us streaming live. You can also join us in IRC on Freenode, pound Linux Slugcast. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss, please email us at feedback@linuxslugcast.com. We also have a Google Plus community site and a mailing list. Visit our website for the direct links. All right, like I said, tonight is episode 93. I am Honky Magoo. With me is 5150.
Howdy, folks.
And Netminer.
Hello, folks.
Seems to be the regular crew. All right, so the only feedback we had was in the G Plus site. Kevin Wisher put in there a link to Sparky Linux going on the Raspberry Pi. So Netminer, you use Sparky Linux a lot. What do you think?
Well, it would be interesting. It'd be a great common denominator for a lot of stuff. I don't know enough about the Raspberry Pi to see what its performance or anything would be like, but it might be an interesting accessory.
Now, what does Sparky Linux give that just a regular Debian distro does not give? Or what do you think the differences would be from one to the other?
Well, Ubuntu-like usability, Codex has installers for web browsers and virtually anything else you want to load. Office package at installers as a high level instead of going into something else. It's basically designed to be a less doctrinaire Debian. Basically, it's like maybe like Mint or a regular Debian, but it's running on, I mean, a regular Ubuntu, but it's running on some of the platforms that the Ubuntu world is leaving behind.
I think I need to take a look at Sparky again.
Now, screenshots on that article make it look a little sparse, as Debian does tend to be sort of usually a lighter distro. Would that be your take, Netminer?
Well, I use XFCE, and it is definitely sparser. Or rather, it comes out complete, but with not a lot of the bells and whistles, and then it gives you the buttons to load the bells and whistles if you like.
Well, it's certainly advantageous for a lower power system.
Well, also, the fact that you can go from your Raspberry Pi to x86 under the same operating system means that it's great for a family environment.
And probably certainly for people just getting into Linux, that they can run the same environment across a variety of hardware. You guys know me, I'm sort of a maverick. I like to pick out something different for every piece of hardware if possible, so I can learn different distros. But if you just want to sit down and get things done and not have to look at a lot of manuals, there's certainly an argument for just running the same system across the board.
Well, for example, I haven't jumped into the Raspberry Pi world, but knowing that I could set up a machine down here, hang it off of one of the inputs to my TV, and run the same sort of software as I run on my desktops here. Yeah, that's pretty powerful. Also, I have some remote applications like temperature monitoring in a distant part of the house, that kind of thing, that I may be able to put a Pi into and again, just talk to it from my desktops downstairs.
Yes, my recent house guests look around and they observed you have way too many computers.
There's no such thing, sir.
Well, of course, I agree. My reply was to ask Google how many computers I have. Surely it's been set up a week, they can figure that much out. But they claim ignorance.
They can't show all their cards. So how are you liking the Google Home?
Oh, they've been playing with it the first couple days. I don't know. I haven't really used it to much utility yet.
Have you used it in along with the Chromecast?
I have. It will work with Netflix. I need to give it my Netflix password. I didn't have that off the top of my head. I played with it the other day, but I have played Yahoo Video saying, you know, hey Google, which will wake it up, and then play latest video from YouTuber X on Chromecast Y. Well, you may have heard Tilts a week ago. We were playing with it, and since I was listening to Rich on the speaker, I had him see if he could, and he was able to control it through the podcast. I had Rich say what it would need to do to play his latest video, and it actually played some random video from somebody else.
I do remember listening to that. Now, you still using the Mycroft?
It's still sitting here. I need to plug it. I really haven't plugged it in since that time we played with it. I need to put it back in the living room, plug it in. It's been, 4 months, so surely it's gotten a little bit better. It's just, like we discussed, I love the idea of everything being open, but unfortunately, you know, Mycroft just doesn't have the resources, and I don't think is ever going to be able to catch up. It'd be fine for answering questions or whatever. How high is the Empire State Building or something like that? It'd be on par. But everything else, I mean, well, maybe somebody will write a Chromecast plug-in for it. I am not going to hold my breath. I mean, it was a keen idea when it came out, but it took too long to get here. And like I said, when you've got giants like Amazon and Google in the market, you just don't, you know, you just can't compete with those resources, I don't think. And I still have stuff bought to, you know, try some, you know, the other open source alternatives as we've talked about, as well as Google Home. And apparently you can install the Google Home and the Amazon client on one Pi and have them live simultaneously.
That would be interesting. I guess it all depends on what command you give it. Or is it with the Alexa, you needed a push button, didn't you? Because you couldn't do the voice.
Right. And I'm not sure if you don't have to do that again with the Google client, but on top of that, I think, you know, which one you address. If you ask Alexa or if you ask Google the question. As I understand it, not having tried it yet, you know, it's not like one or the other. You can put them both on the same device. I guess you could probably try some of the others alongside it and just have a completely schizophrenic Raspberry Pi.
Well, I guess, you know, since Alexa Echo is geared more towards Amazon products, and the other one, the Google one, is geared more towards, obviously, Google products, then I guess one would be able to control things like the Chromecast. So you'd give it, if you gave it a Chromecast demand, or like, do you specify where you want it to play or what device you want to use to play it?
Yes, you have to. Apparently, Google is partnering with Walmart for most of the monetization. Now, I understand, not having run Alexa, but Alexa, it, you know, constantly is asking you, do you want to buy this? Do you want to buy that? And I, at least I don't have that from the Google Home. But there is sort of a service. I mean, well, this is, there was kind of a rebate, and I'm going to have to try to work out how to get this because I don't know if it's set up on my local hometown Walmart. But there, the service they're trying to go through is sort of like a shopping deal service like they have in the big cities where you can, you know, you instead of going in the store and walking around and getting everything on your shopping list, you know, you submit the shopping list digitally, and then you show up at Walmart and they have it all bagged, and you just walk out with it. Now, I don't know how that works with perishables. I guess you'd have to specify a time. The other app that I've seen playing around, Walmart has a new app that, you know, we've seen the experimental Amazon stores where, you know, you just walk around and you scan stuff and put it in your cart and then you just walk out. You know, no checkout or anything. And apparently Walmart now has an app for that. So, you know, as you put stuff, if you put stuff in your cart, you would scan the barcode and just walk out with it.
Well, that's not too crazy. I mean, a lot of things, like I work in a grocery store, and we have a lot of those things already. With the what you're talking about, scanning the barcodes, we don't have anything set up right now where you can just walk out of the store with it. You still kind of have to go through the register and, you know, put in your card and what from there. But it's not that big of a leap from setting up on your phone some sort of a payment option right there. And then once you're done, you can just kind of hit a button to check out and then go. The thing is with those, though, I've seen some people use their phones with to be able to read the barcodes, but that doesn't always, it seems to be a little bit more difficult because to get the, have you ever tried scanning a barcode with your phone?
I've done QR codes. I'm sure I've done barcodes a few times because early on there were a lot of apps, you know, compare prices, you know, you scan in, said, no, you go down here to this other store and get it cheaper or get it online cheaper or whatever.
Most of my experience recently has been like Amazon gift cards or whatever, where you're just trying to line it up all of the numbers with your camera. And a lot of that is hit or miss. And either way, it usually takes about like a good couple of minutes just to get that one thing. It seems like a giant pain to try to do it with the try to get the barcode with the phone. At least that's been my experience. And it kind of seems like when I've watched other people use that to try to do their shopping, it's not as good. So what we provide is basically a barcode scanner that you use, and you'd walk around and you'd scan everything as you go, and then you just put it in your bag, and then when you go to check out, you just kind of you swipe your card, your, you know, buyer reward card or whatever the hell they want to call it, and it brings up everything that you scan, and you just check out that way. Again, I haven't seen it's not a crazy thing to think that you can set all that up and then just set up your account that way. So you really could probably just walk out the door. But with this, at least there is some sort of a check and balance where it's not. With the Amazon stores, it seems like that they had something set up with more with the cameras. I've heard that I still haven't watched the videos yet, but I heard there are videos that try to go into and explain all the intricacies of the camera setup and how the cameras kind of keep an eye on you and how much of, you know, what you take versus what you scan, sort of a thing. And then when you walk out, you know, so they monitor whether you're stealing or not. while this system is more, it's a little bit, it's like a much dumbed down version of that, where it, since you're going through register, it's part of the agreement for that is that occasionally you're going to get spot checked. And so they'll just kind of go through and choose several items off of the list that you scanned, and you know, the stuff that you scan versus what's in the bag. But it also leaves, like, I've seen our security team use that as a way to, like, if they see people who they think are putting stuff in and not scanning it, they have a ways to go into the system and have that automatically trigger, so they can go down and then start you know, doing a manual search for their bags.
Yeah, and you know, not so much about barcodes, but QR codes have always been a pain in the butt for me to get centered and hold steady long enough for it to be recognized and all that. Since you're in the industry, one thing I'd really like for you guys to do, and it's probably never happened because it's probably runs against your bottom line, is have, you know, like near field communication or wherever. That would be like GPS inside the store. And if I go in, you know, I want ho-hos or something, you know, it takes me right to that aisle rather than me having to walk back and forth across the store. And of course, you know, grocery stores make a lot of money because people are walking back and forth across the store and saying, hey, that's cool, I'll have one of those.
Yep. That's actually true too, and there's the fact that because of, and there are probably a lot of different reasons between how marketability as to positioning of a product to space to what they think would go better, but the bottom line is a lot of stuff changes where it is in the store often. Like, I'm a produce guy, and my department changes quite a bit. Like, we have, like, the regular sale ends that change, but then, like, seasonally, things in the department will change. And then, like, just because I have a ton of something, then I'll where that position of that product will go will change. There's nothing in a grocery store that is static enough that you could set something like that up. Now, you probably could, conceivably, maybe. But it's like I said, it's things change way too often to be able to get that down right.
Well, that's what my mom always complained about, and she said she always figured it was on purpose to run her around the store so that you could sell her stuff she didn't want.
There is some truth to that, I think. That's why in grocery stores, for the most part, you won't find the milk like up front by the registers. That's why they put the milk in like the far right hand corner of the store, is so that makes you walk all the way down there past everything else to be able to get to it. Because probably one of the biggest things that, you know, if they wanted you just to come in, come out as fast as possible, they would probably, as soon as you walk in through the door, just have the milk. Yeah, because that's like probably one of the biggest things that people buy, especially like quickly.
Yeah, being by myself, that's one of the trouble. I haven't been able to finish a half gallon of milk before it went bad in years. I mean, I should, for health. Well, some people disagree with this, but I should just be drinking it every morning. But I usually just, I keep milk around, you know, when I have a recipe, you know, needs a cup of milk or something.
Yeah, if it wasn't for my kids, I'd probably, well, my wife drinks a lot of milk too, but it wasn't for them, I've never been a huge milk drinker. It's one of those things with me where it seems for me to create a lot of phlegm when I drink milk for me, so I try to steer clear of it. Like cereal, it's not bad.
Can I interject something here? I've run across an interesting article on G-Hacks. Google to block YouTube on Amazon Fire TV.
So isn't YouTube and Google the same thing?
Yes, but Google wants to block YouTube on the Fire Stick or Fire TV. So in other words, Google's claiming that that YouTube is one of its properties, so it's not going to allow Amazon to play with it.
Oh, I see. And that was on my list down there, you know, if we wanted to talk about net neutrality. you'd think they'd be shooting themselves in their foot. You know, you buy a tablet. Well, Fire TV's not a tablet, but I mean, you know, you get that, and first thing you probably want to do is, oh, let's watch a YouTube video. What do you mean I can't watch a YouTube video? And you call your techie friend and says, ha ha, you should have bought a Chromecast.
What I find interesting is the date.
Today?
December 6th.
Now, the only thing I put net neutrality question mark in my stuff. The only thing I will say that might be good about net neutrality going away is all these people who ignored it and, you know, all of a sudden either they're not going to be able to get their Netflix or they find out their ISP is charging them extra for streaming media and social media. It's a separate charge. Maybe these people will wake up and say, hey, you know, maybe we should have listened with all this net. Everybody was talking about net neutrality.
I think that's going to be the lesson of this entire administration. We should have listened to XYZ, whatever XYZ happened to be.
Yeah, I don't think we were going to ever get around the net neutrality when, you know, you saw the stunt with the 60 pallets of paper on one side and a couple stacks of paper on the other. And that was all about the net neutrality. And yeah, cut through that and that, you know. Now all these mountains of regulations are gone away.
Yeah. You know, you wouldn't have to worry so much about losing your keys if you just didn't have locks on your front door.
And, well, I mean, you know, and the comparison was like FCC regulations in 1960. So that was, what, 5 years before there was even such a thing as the Internet at all?
Well, yeah, but also they're talking about back when there wasn't the Internet was a military thing for decades. I mean, into the 80s.
Well, yeah, I remember when we first got Usenet at the school, you know, and Internet. And that was in the early to mid-80s. And well, actually, the first time they put Unix on the servers, they had, like, AT&T servers, and that was back in the old SneakerNet days. They had to, it wasn't like they took a tape or, you know, certainly not a thumb drive or anything or a disk, but it's not like they took a tape from somebody to give them Unix. That what they actually had was pages and pages and pages of printout of C code, and they had to sit down and you know, type all that C code into an editor and compile it, and of course, you know, fiddle it around for their particular hardware, and then after that, presently. We got internet. Of course, that was years before the web, but, you know, it's essentially email and Usenet.
So do we have anything more on the whole net neutrality stuff before moving on? Or
I've said all I wanted to. Just, you know, maybe people will wake up when they start. Either they can't access stuff they used to access before, or they're starting to get charged a premium for accessing that stuff.
No one's going to wake up. Or if so, they're just going to shrug it off as to, oh, I have to do this now.
You're very depressing, sir.
Plus, when they do wake up, what are they going to do?
Call their congressman this time, I guess.
And what's he going to do?
I'm sure you're probably right.
Actually, what we may have is the next president say, I'm going to retract what all of the retractions of whatever. Of course, that makes a great campaign promise, and then when he gets in, funded by the additional money produced by the ISPs, he will conveniently forget it, just like certain inconvenient changes to military regulations the Clintons forgot.
Hey, Honky, do you want to start out with, well, I guess you got a couple things in there if you want to do them first, and then go through what we're going to do for the Hacker Public Radio New Year's Eve show this year.
Sure. Can you give me one sec, though?
Sure. While I'm waiting for you, we'll talk about one of the things I had. I guess we'll jump back and forth. I had meant to get this done before tonight, just wasn't able to squeeze it in. This was something I learned about in the chat room for the Linux Links Tech Show last week. We got on printers and how rubbish they are, essentially. But I said, I mentioned in the chat, and the worst thing is these all-in-one printers that are printer/scanner/copier, whatever. Sure, they have wireless, and you can, in theory, print to that printer from any system on your network, but you'd only scan from the one that's plugged into the USB cable. And I got pretty much immediate reply to that, so that's not really true. You can install this thing called Sane Daemon, Sane being the underlining scanner interface, and put that on a computer and plug that into the USB, and then access that from any other computer on your network. So what I'm looking at, using one of my Orange Pi Zeros. The link I have in the show notes was procedure for Ubuntu. So I intend to set it up with Armbian, which is usually a Debian variant, but for the Raspberry Pi Zero, it's actually a Ubuntu variant. So it's Ubuntu server, essentially. So install that, and the image should have finished downloading about the time we started. So I didn't even have that yet. And set that up. The Raspberry Pi Zero, or not the Raspberry Pi, the Orange Pi Zero is a headless 4-core system. So get that installed. Get Armbian installed, remote into it. Now, it looks like there's a couple config files that you have to set up on the server, and then you have to configure a config file on each client that you want to connect to it. And I'll go into detail on that next time in the new year once I've actually done it. And if I get that running, I'll probably set up the same computer as a print server for the printer, even though I've got the wireless address of the printer locked down through my router via the MAC address. That's the trouble I've always had with wireless printers. They tend to drift to whatever IP they want. So you set it up, and then next time you go to print, it's not there at the same IP. So, if I didn't know that's possible, there's probably other people out there didn't know it was possible to actually set up a Sane server on your USB scanner and then make it possible for any computer on the network to control the scanner. So look for more on that next time. Are you caught up with us yet, Honky, or do I need to continue?
Yep, sorry. distracted by the wife. Yeah, so we're doing the HPR on New Year's Eve thing show again. For all the details, I'm actually going to probably read this out quickly, so bear with me, please. On the Linux Slugcast site, if you go to the news section, it'll be the top part of the news section. Also, if you are in the HPR mailing list, you probably would have heard about this and many of the discussions around it. So, what it is, actually, you know what, I'm going to better up summing this up. So what it is on December 31st, around 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'm going to basically just hit record on the, it is basically now the HPR Mumble server. And the details for that are in the show, are on the website there. And anybody who wants to show up and talk and or give a, you know, so me and a couple of other people are basically going to have a recording going through this entire time. It'll probably run, it starts at 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on December 31st and will end on January 1st, 2018 at about 7 a.m. Unless there's anybody else still talking. Around that time, I'll probably check to the stream, or I'll probably keep some stay logged in just so I can keep an eye on things and check to see whether there's anybody still talking. And if somebody's still talking, then I'll just keep the recording going until everybody seems to have left or fallen asleep or whatever, and then I'll just stop it there. So if anyone just wants to pop onto the channel and say something, if there's like nobody else around or nobody else seems to be talking or whatever, there's a recording going constantly, so they can. But this is just an opportunity for people to come in, say Happy New Year to the HPR community, because I'm going to take all of this recording, chop it up into, I usually try to do between 4 to, last year I wound up doing 6. Because we actually got a lot of audio out of it, and 6 parts, and then I'll upload it to Hacker Public Radio, and don't expect it to come out right away. I know in the past they used to try to do it like as soon as possible. They used to, I think Ken would take that like first chunk of like first couple like 4 hours or whatever, and have that uploaded for download on like the first on that next day. But don't look for that. I'll get to it when I can get to it. Because the biggest pain of that is actually editing the show notes, because a lot of times there is a Taj has been very grateful to give us a Etherpad to host all the show notes onto. But a lot of times people don't always put stuff into the show notes, so I wind up having to listen to the entire recording and then sometimes looking up some URLs, and then a lot of times what I put down for show notes is just some of the topics that were discussed during that time. So we'll have a stream going, we'll have an Etherpad for show notes, and like I said, we're going to be starting at 5 a.m. Eastern Time, Eastern Standard Time on December 31st, and ending around 7 a.m. Eastern Time on January 1st, 2018. Like I said, the details for the Mumble server will be on linuxslugcast.com. Part of the reason why I put up the page on linuxslugcast.com was to give something for Ken to link to, so it'll also show up on all the same details will show up on HackerPublicRadio. Is it .com or .org?
.org.
HackerPublicRadio.org, and that'll probably be on their homepage for a while. So recently on the Hacker Public Radio mailing list, they've also talked about doing I know Klaatu and some others that were talking about doing a role-playing game during the 24-hour show. So if you like playing RPGs, I got the Dungeons and Dragons style RPGs, then definitely joined. I think they're talking about starting at somewhere around like 7, 8 o'clock or something like that EST. But yeah, so we've been doing this the last couple of years. It seemed to have lost interest a while ago, so I kind of took over trying doing the editing and stuff. But I think it was originally started by Pokey. It was originally a 12-hour one started by Pokey about 6 years ago. And then it expanded to 24 hours and then extended into like the 32 just to give all of the time zones and all of the New Year's to go through.
Yeah, we kind of... the first show was a little... it was Pokey's idea. Thank you, Pokey. If anybody didn't catch the whole reason, starting at 5 a.m. Eastern, that is when the first time zone in the world crosses into the New Year's. And that's going to be around New Zealand, progressing towards Australia, where Claw 2 and Peter 64 and a lot of our friends live. And that'll go on for a while, and then sometimes it hits a dead space around the Asian sector because, frankly, I guess the language barrier, there's not a lot of people, English speakers in Asia, listening to Linux podcasts in English. I'm certain there's all kinds of Linux podcasts in different dialects and, of course, across the former Soviet Union, and then picks up again about when we hit Europe. And usually stays going pretty good. I mean, it's there's hardly ever any dead space in there. I'm going to try to be around most of the 24 hours. I'm getting older. That doesn't work out so well for me as when we started, but I'll do the best I can, stay in there for continuity. And Honky, when you said 7 o'clock, that was 7 a.m.
7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Excellent, excellent. And what Honky means by an RPG, it's not like we're all going to join an online game. This is a traditional tabletop RPG played out over Mumble. So Claw 2 will be Dungeon Master. And, we'll be saying, cast spell of kicking butt or whatever. And I assume he will control the dice and whatever to tell us whether we were successful or not. So it's like actually playing tabletop Dungeons and Dragons. It's not that. I can put the link to the game rules in the show notes. It is like a free will contribution to download the show rules. So you probably want at least to throw a couple shekels the developer's way. I mean, it's up to you if you want to participate.
Yeah, I think so. When it first started talking about that, there was that whole bit about I think Kevin brought up the fact of, should that happen in a different room and leave that channel open, but everyone seems to want to be involved with it or listening to it, so it would probably stay there. I think the big problem with that is the fact that I like the idea of everybody talking and stuff, and I think that'll kind of take away from that. But at the same time, I like the fact that that this is a big community gaming thing too, and it seems like most of the people that I really want to talk to are probably going to be involved with the whole gaming thing. So I don't know. I wish that the gaming would have taken place earlier on in the day, but I know that would probably conflict with everybody's schedules, because, like you said, there is kind of that like dead zone time between like probably the very beginning running till like about really most of the morning most of the daytime, it people are kind of sparse. But once you hit like 6 or 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or even probably before that, like even like 4 or 5, when like a lot of people seem to be getting out of work, it really starts to ramp up and then goes throughout like most of the night. But I don't know. I think it'll be cool. It'll be interesting to hear. I'm hoping I get to participate a lot, but work seems like it's going to be a giant freaking pain. They want me to do inventory on New Year's Day, so there's that. I might have to just remote in to check in on things.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun. New Year's Eve will be this year on a Sunday. We've been lucky the last few years. Hitting the weekend. I think leap year gave us another day on that. But come next year, it's going to be, the whole thing's going to be a work day. So we may want to rethink doing the 24-hour thing. But that's a topic for next year. And I mean, the reason we went to 24 hours so we wouldn't be leaving out our our friends on the other side of the world, which we have so many of.
I think you should still leave it as 24 hours. Like I said, even if there's nobody in the channel, people can still just pop in, say like Happy New Year's, and pop right off or whatever. And then if the majority of the time that we get content is just between, you know, friggin' 9 o'clock at night till like maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, there are times when, you know, I think it was around last year, it was like around New Year's, it was like right around midnight or so, that there was enough people on the channel that people had a hard time getting on, which I gotta remind me to talk to Ken about. And there was, there was so many people talking that, you know, and so much discussion going on that if you had a thought, you had to kind of hold on to it for a little while until you had a chance, because so many people wanted to talk, you know. It's hard to get a word in edgewise because there's so many people, you know.
And for people who never participate, it is not, you know, 24 hours of, open source, dry computer discussion. In fact, there's probably very little, technical discussion. A lot is always revolved around food, you know, pop culture, other things. So, you know. All I can say, it's always been a blast.
Absolutely. That's why I keep trying to keep it alive, is because I always have fun. I think it's kind of how I kind of got into the whole whole podcasting thing. Is I joined on one evening and it kind of broke down that whole third wall for me. So it kind of opened up the possibility of podcasting. So I want to leave that open to the possibility of it doing that for somebody else as well. So.
Okay, and if anybody has any questions in between there, I think, you know, I'm 5150 at linuxbasement.com. Get to Honky Magoo. You can post questions in the HPR mailing list. We'll get you squared away. Honky, will you want to continue with your other two topics before we jump back to me?
So, basically what these are is kind of what I've been up to is, my problem recently has been I've been talking a lot about is the death of the 32-bit systems, and I've been wanting to just kind of double down on Debian, but, with Debian seems to be a little bit of a struggle to get the, Broadcom wireless drivers for, and there's something called the B43FW cutter, which you can get them, but the problem is you need internet to be able to get the Broadcom drivers. So I've been trying to find a way to do a workaround where I can basically have all those drivers already on the machine to be able, or on the thing, because during the install, it will ask you if you have those drivers. It'll it'll do a scan of your hardware and then say, hey, you have a wireless card. Do you have any of do you have these certain drivers for them? So I've been trying to figure out a way to have all of those drivers on the install media, so I can just have a do a check on the install media or something along those lines. So one of the things, two things that I found was in my searching, I found that Debian actually, it was actually on the Debian site, I believe. There is the unofficial non-free images, including firmware packages of Debian. So there's basically Debian packages, their own, basically just Debian testing as opposed to Debian stable, and they have ISO images of this. But it says it has the non-free, including firmware packages, but it doesn't have, I mean, it has the B43 FW cutter on it, but again, it still requires it to go out and come back to be able to get it, to get the proper drivers. So what I wanted to do was to take one of these ISO images, download it, and then mount it. And then I put a link into the show notes as to how to mount an ISO, which is to make a directory to be able to mount it, and then do mount -o loop FC5, well, the name of the ISO, and then the directory you mounted it to. And then that's pretty much it. And once you can go into there, and well, you have to make sure that it's you have read-write privileges. So you do like a chmod 777 for that directory. But once you do that, you can go in there and start changing stuff around. And I believe, which I did not put into the show notes, and I also need to play with next, because I've done, like I said, I downloaded the Debian testing, Debian testing ISO, and I have mounted it, and I've went around it, and that's how I found that it did have, because I had downloaded a copy, I think, of the FW cutter, and I was going to put it in there, and found that it already was in there. But the problem was, it just seems to be FW cutter. Just seems to be a program that goes out, grabs the right drivers, and pulls them in. So what I think I found, which I'm going to have to put into the show notes, is a way to extract the drivers out of the FW cutter with being offline. So what I want to do is do that onto a Debian testing ISO and then see if I can run the Debian installer and have it find the proper drivers already on there, because that they've already been extracted onto there. Plus, I got to figure out which directories. I think it's /lib/firmware would be the proper directory to put all of the firmware drivers, but that's my next steps into what I'm trying to do. Then again, this would probably all be easier if I could find like a Debian, somebody's version of Debian with this already done, but I haven't found anything yet. In my travels, I have also found, because I was searching for a version of Debian that may have it, but I found two different versions of Debian. One is called Minin, M-I-N-I-N, and again, I'll try to remember to put the links to that in the show notes. It is a version of Debian that's been geared more towards older hardware, and it's very pretty. They did a real nice job making it look nice and pretty. Especially since it's geared more towards older hardware. But that didn't have what I was looking for, so I only spent a little bit of time playing with it. And if you get a chance, if you are using older hardware and don't really care about that, give it a look. Run it in a live system. And there was another one. By the way, so I can't find where the other one was. All right, but for those looking for a flashier version of just straight up Debian, give Minin try. So that's all I got right now. Oh, I'm stuck.
Okay. Well, I'll go through my remaining links fairly quickly. There's been some changes at Hacker Public Radio. It came up on the mailing list last week that to reduce the strain on an honesthost.com, they were going to move the actual download links to archive.com. So they're working on that. And I mentioned in the mailing list, well, hey, you know, if we're going to move the hosting over to archive.org, sorry, probably wouldn't be a bad idea for a few of us to kick a little in the kitty there. And Joshua from An Honest Host, who actually does the website hosting for Hacker Public Radio. And the only reason I mention this here, all this Hacker Public Radio insider baseball stuff, is a lot of folks who listen to the show may also listen to Hacker Public Radio but may not be subscribed to the mailing list. But Joshua from honesthost.com said, yeah. And, you know, he says, I love the HPR project. I'm fully behind it. But the company hasn't really realized any income from doing the hosting. We were really hoping, you know, people would take advantage of the coupons and do their hosting with us. And, you know, of course, probably what he doesn't realize is all the hosts on Hacker Public Radio are the cheapskates who don't want to host their own stuff and then putting it off on another server. That's an oversimplification. It's true for me. You know, I don't want to host my own, pay for hosting my own podcast. So it's great that I can do one and throw it up on HPR and not worry about it. But, you know, and I came back and made the list, well, you know, probably we ought to set up a place to throw a little bit of money your way too, Joshua. And that's what's happened. There's a link there in the show notes. It's going through their cart, but essentially it's just, you know, rather than paying for hosting, you're supporting the Hacker Public Radio's hosting. And you know, so if you're a listener, you might want to consider, if you're a host, you know, on HPR, definitely probably want to consider a little something for the effort from Joshua and his company for keeping all that stuff together. And there's various levels. There's what, various levels of one-time donations, and there's various levels of monthly donations. So, you know, if you're a fan of HPR, consider clicking on that link and looking at your options. Also, HPR is down right now this evening to about 7 days worth of shows. So, definitely, and I'm sitting on a show that I recorded last week, and I still need to export and stuff. Maybe I'll get it in tonight or tomorrow. But you know, if you've got a show in you between now and the end of the year, very very much consider getting it done for HPR. Okay, this next rest of these are pretty much. Oh, I think I jumped over one. Okay. This is from my personal experience, no link. Redbox just recently has become a streaming host. And, of course, Redbox is that box you see outside Walmart and, you know, grocery stores, whatever, where you can select a DVD and you put in your credit card and a DVD comes out the slot or Blu-ray. And you take it home, you play it, and you bring it back the next day. Well, there's always been a companion app for Red. Well, I don't know, but always. I wasn't in for, but since I've been renting Redbox, there's been a companion app, and it pretty much just tells you what shows are what movies are coming out. I've never done it. If you wanted to reserve, you know, a rental in your local kiosk, you could do that, pay for it online. But they just, I think just in the last week, this came through my email, they have changed the app to also allow streaming. So in other words, instead of getting in the car, driving to the store, getting out, going up to the Redbox kiosk, you know, putting in your credit card and selecting a movie, you can just stay at home, run the Redbox app, say, I want to see this movie, and you pay for it right there. It's either like credit card or PayPal. I don't think they keep your information every time. I'll let you know the next time I use it. And it comes up a lot like Amazon. They'll say, okay, you can start watching this movie anytime in the next 4 months, but once you start watching it, you have to finish in 48 hours. Of course, you can actually buy the movie and have it in perpetuity. I don't know why you would do that, but that's also an option. This is Linux related because there's an Android client for it, as well as a Mac client and a PC client and I already said Mac. I'm in iPhone. There's iPhone client, Android client app, and there's also PC and Mac clients that you can download on. Sorry, no Linux app. No Linux client. But, you know, for me at least, you know, Redbox became a streaming host. This is a game changer. Because for me to use Redbox before, of course, I'm rural. It's a 10-mile drive into town, which, I mean, not a huge thing, not a huge amount of gas, but generally, I'd only availed myself of Redbox if I knew I had to be back in the town the next day, which, you know, usually is not the case. A lot of times I've rented the same movie on Amazon for more money than it would be from Redbox for that very reason. You know, I don't want to drive into town but burn the gas to return the movie. And, you know, Redbox stuff hits Redbox before it hits the other streaming services. HBO, Netflix, whatever. I mean, if you go into Redbox and one of their things is they've reached an agreement with the producer or whatever, says, yeah, get this movie here. Won't be on Netflix for years. So, yeah, definitely. For me, it's a game changer. I think for a lot of people, it may be because, even if they're right there in town, you know, getting the car at all and driving across and getting it. Now, I'm not sure. The movie I watched last night was like $3 rather than $2, so I don't know if they're charging right now a premium. I would expect maybe... this becomes popular, that might go away. I don't know. A particular movie I watched was the animated Batman and Robin, where it was actually Adam West and Bruce Ward and the remaining living characters of the original 1960s cast doing an animation in the style of you know, the original 1960s TV show. There's another one out that, I mean, it hasn't come out, but they did it before the death of Adam West. They did another one of those. Julie Newmar, of course, Catwoman. I think, you know, everybody else is pretty much dead. Incredibly campy, a lot of in jokes. Not, I think, up to standards of some, you know, some of the DC animated stuff that's out there. But I don't think it's meant to be. I mean, it's meant to be kind of a big joke. And that, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with open source. But, you know, I think for cable cutters, this really does change the game. And I would not want to be somebody who has stock in a company that makes physical media, because I think Redbox has been propping that up the last few years. I mean, yeah, you can still go to Walmart, buy physical DVDs, but if everybody quits going to the little kiosks and just uses Redbox as a streaming service, which is what I predict, I think things are going to change even further to online digital media.
I gotta say though, I prefer that if I'm going to own a copy of the movie, then I'd rather own the physical media as opposed to a digital copy on a service. Because I also think of it as a physical backup. So if something happens, because more than likely I'll just, you know, use Handbrake and rip it and throw it on my network, and so I can stream it throughout the house. But I mean, at some point something may happen. I like to be able to have the physical media to actually be able to re-rip it if there some problem occurs. I just feel better that way.
Oh, I agree. If there's a movie I want, I mean, it's just my personal preference is there's very, very few movies I really want to watch more than once, and more, you know, if I do, they were probably made 50 years ago. It's one of the bad things about the fire. Pretty big, huge Western collection I got from my dad, and rebuilt a lot of it, but certainly not all of it. And he, you know, he would sit there and just watch Westerns all day long, or war movies, or whatever. But I mean, I got where, you know, all the movies he had, I could probably quote the entire text of the movie. And I mean, you know, there are a lot of them I like. There's good, but you know, for my own personal consumption, there's very few movies I would want to own rather than rent.
Well, the biggest thing with me is, of course, the kids. That's the biggest thing that I actually have, you know, bought movies of recently and have definitely ripped. I mean, most of my ripped media is stuff for the kids, because they'll take like one movie and then just watch it to death. So I mean, there's a lot of that I'm watching repeatedly. But you know, there's a lot of Star Wars movies. Any of the I really liked all the Marvel movies. I've rewatched a lot of them. Star Trek movies, I probably rewatch a lot of them. I definitely have a list of things that I would probably watch over again.
Yeah, thing is, with a lot of those movies between Hulu and Netflix, I could watch them anytime I want. Now, of course, once Disney sucks the soul out of Netflix, that's going to be more problematical. Probably when Disney starts their service, I'll subscribe to it, because, you know, it's just all the Marvel movies will be there, Star Wars, all, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's not like, you know, you're getting on to watch one thing. Speaking of which, if nobody's seen it, and I haven't taken advantage of it yet, the CBS extra pay thing, I saw on there that that was free for a month now. I mean, probably the end of this month. So if you haven't seen Discovery, you can get it for a month. And I don't know if they have all the episodes up there or just the last few, but if you want to see what Discovery is like without paying for it, I think you can do that now.
I have no desire. I really think the whole idea of Disney starting their own streaming service, I think that's it's crazy. I mean, the amount of content that they have in Netflix right now. I mean, at this point, why don't they just double down and buy Netflix? Really?
Don't give them any ideas. They just bought Fox.
They bought Fox?
Oh yeah, everything but essentially, but Fox News. So I mean, they talk about that, you know, X-Men and whatever, but anything, you know. What if they decide they don't like the stuff that's on Fox, like Orville or Gotham? I know a lot of people don't like Gotham. I'm a huge Batman fan, so I'm sorry. But, you know, Orville is the best Trek series in 20 years.
It is. It's sad because, you know, there's the satire in there, but, I mean, it's still, it's basically Star Trek with, Seth MacFarlane.
Well, I mean, it, you know, they did the first few, you know, really farcical, and then it's got less, you know, it's got more Trek and less farce as they've gone along. I still bet by, you know, right after Christmas, Think Geek was a Watchmen or what, you know, the football with the knife that comes out.
Football with the knife that comes out?
Did you see the last episode yet?
Oh, no. I haven't. I've watched everything up to that last episode. I haven't seen it yet, no.
Okay, we won't discuss this then.
All right.
I've already ruined the first 15 minutes for you.
Nah. Yeah, I mean, what are they going to... Because it's Marvel Studios owns basically the Netflix Marvel Universe, but it's a subversion of the regular Marvel Studios universe, right?
Well, and then they would have to pull in all the, you know, the Marvel from every place else. The Gifted, the Runaways, the one with the super powerful guy that's on FX.
They just make the Marvel Channel.
Well, exactly, and I would watch the Marvel Channel if they move all that stuff over. If I had to pay for it, but it's just, and I'm wondering, you know, yeah, with all this FX, because, you know, it's licensed by Marvel, but Netflix is actually doing the production on those. So, you know, when they pull out, are they, you know, will they just drop those four characters?
That's horrible. They've been doing such a, that's why I think they should just double down and either buy Netflix or whatever. I mean, if they buy Netflix, they can just stream their content through there, something that already, you know, is established as opposed to starting something new. I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed the fact that, you know, as soon as pretty much a little while after it was out, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 showed up on Netflix, or Doctor Strange showed up relatively quickly on Netflix.
Yeah, right. There's a lot, you know, well, it's getting long enough. A lot of the older Marvel movies, you know, I'm thinking, you know, what happened when then, you know, maybe I should go back and watch them. So, yeah, it's nice to have the place to go do it.
What's going to be interesting is to see, because now each one of these providers is going to have to make a deal with everybody. Unless they're under somebody big enough like Disney, who's big enough to wield a pretty good sized club. Netflix already had to make a private deal with Comcast, and I see a lot of that going on with everybody everywhere.
Well, I mean, yeah, Disney pulls out. It is going to, well, I won't say gut Netflix, but it's not going to be, if it won't be pretty.
So what are you saying, Mike? You think that somebody like Disney is going to start holding a monopoly over the streaming service because they can, they have the money to wield, you know, to be able to, let's say that our content gets better bandwidth over other stuff?
Well, I'm saying that I don't know whether Disney's pullout of Netflix is designed to produce anything real except to put a gun to Netflix's head saying, sell yourself to us or we're going to gut you anyway.
Which I think is fair because, look, I like Netflix, but there, besides, like, there's a very few amount of, like, newer movies that come out of it. The best part about Netflix is its ability to your ability to, like, take in entire series, you know, of some show, like many seasons of some show, take it all down at once. That's the big thing about Netflix is all the television series. Most of the movies seem to be dated. Besides, like I was talking about the Disney stuff, and then if you take the Disney stuff and the Marvel originals, the Marvel Netflix original stuff out of there, I think it'll really hinder what Netflix has, and they'd have to really really up their game.
Well, that was my first experience with Netflix before they got the Marvel stuff and some of their original series that they've written. But, you know, the movies were kind of dated and, you know, or they weren't dated enough. It's like, you know, if somebody would do all the old Westerns, you know, I would pay for that. But they don't, you know, nobody does. Well, there's a few broadcast TV services that do that, but you know, nobody streaming really does the old 50s and 60s Westerns beyond two or three of them, or war movies, whatever. Somebody did the old movies, I would, you know, I'd be into that. Definitely compared with the other streaming services, my original impression of Netflix as well, there's just not a whole lot of stuff here. But I mean, that was before they started doing their own stuff, doing the Marvel stuff. And it always seems like looking at the HBO and the Showtime, which I am now getting through Hulu. It's like, yeah, I thought there used to be a lot more first-run movies on these, you know, at least on cable. But they're, you know, where are all these movies going to? I guess where we started, I guess they're going to Redbox. You already see them on Redbox before they ever hit HBO.
Now, does Starz have a streaming service? Because if they do, they used to have, didn't they used to have a, or probably still do, a Starz Western channel?
Yeah, you can get an ad on Starz. I don't know about the Western channel, but you can, you know, I think their primary show is, I'm blanking on the name, but the World War II nurse who goes back into Scotland.
All I have is Nurse Jackie in my head, and I don't think that's right.
No, that definitely isn't right. There's a few things on Starz, but it's not that I'd like to see, but not enough for me to pay for an extra service.
Unless you can get a Western channel.
Right. No, a lot of, you know, a lot of the cable services that aren't picked up by anybody else, if you've got Amazon Prime, you can get those channels if you want to pay extra.
Prime's another one that's hit or miss.
Well, I got it mainly for the faster shipping, but since I got it, you know, I do use it for things like Mr. Robot, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's how I got caught up with last season, as I found season 2 of Mr. Robot on there.
I cannot believe Dark Matter got canceled.
No, it did? I did not know that.
Oh, sorry, I just ruined your day.
You did?
kind of similar, I think, as Spoil Sports, which something like that I've been wanting. You can get that. You pay for it through Amazon. I don't think there's any way to get anywhere to get it free.
Yeah, I've had Prime for a while, but I just recently started watching it again because I was able to find season 2 of Overlord, you just said it.
Mr. Robot and Humans is on there. I need to watch the second season of that. Man in the High Tower, stuff like that. There's some good stuff on there.
Yeah, but I found a bunch of stuff for my kids too, so they have a lot of good content for kids on there that's free. But again, I mean, a lot of, like, when I first got it, I didn't really watch a lot because a lot of their stuff was. A lot of the things I found I was looking for was all available, but you had to pay for it.
Right there, you know, there's a lot of their series I like The Grand Tour, and I think there's some cheap sci-fi movies that I paid to get but didn't watch and have gone past the expiration date. I have to go back and pay for them again if I wanted to watch them. And of course, we're in the mid-season break doldrums right now. I'd like to find the guy who invented that and beat him to a pulp.
Yes, but it's giving me an opportunity to try to catch up.
See, that's the trouble. I'm caught up, which is my whole problem. I should be like you and be in that position of trying to catch up. But I waste too much sleepy time. Well, of course, all the CW stuff. Well, it used to not come out till like 2 o'clock in the morning here. I think they've moved an hour ahead, you know. But I'd always watch on the day of.
That's the stuff I'm trying to get caught up on. It's just called the DC Channel.
Exactly.
Are they adding more with like Black Lightning?
Yeah, I saw a thing on Black Lightning today. It says. Not immediately going to be in the Arrowverse, so maybe like the first season, no crossover. Of course, logically, why is it not the Constantineverse? Because he was first.
I never watched the Constantine show. That was on like CBS originally, wasn't it?
Yeah, I never did either. But of course, it's all on CW Seed now. If you want to see it.
Now, when Constantine was on Arrow, was that the Constantine, the same actor that they used for the Constantine show?
Yes, it is. Also the same actor did the voice in Justice League Dark. All the Constantine stuff, other than Keanu Reeves, is the same guy.
Keanu.
I mean, they're actually talking about him, maybe not seriously, but they don't know what's going on. Replacing Firestorm on Legends.
Really?
Yeah, they're thinking it may be Kid Flashmore or something, but then, well, you know, there's other new series, DC series coming out. There's going to be a live-action Teen Titans series. There's the, you know, they're bringing back after, what, 3 years... well, essentially Teen Titans would, not Justice League Junior or something, you know, whatever that cartoon was.
It was a Teen Titans, show.
No, not Teen Titans. Oh, shoot. What was it? I mean, essentially it was the same thing, but, Oh, maybe I can look for it real quick. But it's all, you know, the first two seasons of it are all on Netflix. Pretty good.
My daughter got into the DC Heroes Girls, which I find very confusing. But then again, I have a very limited knowledge of the DC universe anyway. So,
Young Justice, that's what I'm thinking of.
Never heard of that one.
Oh, I think you'd like that. But I mean, it's animated, you know, aimed more towards kids, but it's out there on Netflix. I mean, you know, it's not like they don't, you know, there are a few more adult things on there, but it's essentially, you know, you have the Justice League on there, and then you have the Junior Justice League, like Satana. Originally started out with the original Robin, and then jumped ahead 2 years between seasons, so Robin had become Nightwing, and the younger Robin. Oh, I'm blanking. I am not the greatest comic historian. You know, you know, just the junior versions of all the Justice League characters, Miss Martian, etc. The clone Superman. I wish there was some place I could stream Batman Beyond. I can do clips on YouTube all day long, but doesn't seem like any service that actually does full episodes.
Wasn't that on Netflix at one point?
Might have been. In any case, we're probably really far afield of topic. Maybe bring it back to open source. One really scary story I saw last week. The German Interior Minister wants encryption back doors in all cars and digital devices. And by that, I mean a hardwired back door, which we all know. If you hardwire a back door, it's going to be no time before somebody cracks it and puts it out there on the web.
Right. That's the same foolishness of trying to give the government any sort of a back door to anything. If one exists at all, then obviously it's no longer secure. So what the heck's the point?
And the irony is the German government was one of the ones, you know, the big push on Google for the right to be forgotten and Facebook. So I don't know how much traction this will get. Of course, the thing is the companies aren't going to build one device for Germany and one device for England and one device for United States. If they get this in, you know, you get one company saying, no, you can't make a phone unless or a car unless you have this in there, then it's going to be for everybody. Okay, back to net neutrality. There was, of course, an FCC comment forum for everybody leave their comments where the, you know, pro or con on net neutrality. And apparently people discovered there were a lot of comments on there using other people's names. In other words, a lot of identity theft. So and of course all of it against net neutrality. So people would go on there and try to leave a comment and says, oh, well, you already left a comment. So the New York Attorney General, I believe, set up an app or at least a website, you know, so you could put in your name and it would pop up what you supposedly responded to on net neutrality. Not that obviously it did much good. There are links on the website for similar services for other states. So it's too late now, but you might want to go in and see somebody if somebody was making comments in your name without your permission. And the next one I had, there is a $35 Raspberry Pi clone, the Rockchip processor that gives you 4 gig of DDR, USB 3.0, gigabit Ethernet, ARM Mali 450 GPU. A lot of stuff is either Mali 450 or 400, so that's not so much of a huge jump. Two USB 2.0 ports and one USB Type A port. And I talked last show about maybe getting a ROC 64 to replace my server, which is originally an original. Original Raspberry Pi B plus. So get a USB 3 external hard drive. And just aside, if you can find it, I don't have a link. Did have something come through my email, like $100 off tonight. Get it for midnight on at Newegg on a 8 gig external USB 3 hard drives. It was like a $250 after the discount. Spent too much already recently, but that's awful tempting. But you know, this actually, you know, comes, this one comes stock with 4 gig of RAM. So that, that's towards the high end of the ROC 64, which is like $44. So not $9 cheaper for this. Right now it comes with Android and Ubuntu 16.04, I guess. So, you know, not, doesn't look like there's a huge selection of actual Linux out there yet, but probably if it's running 16.04, you know, other stuff will come. Looks like maybe the Android's a little more polished on it, but if you're going to, if you, you know, this looks like pretty good choice for a server if the Ubuntu works at all.
And it looks like it got funded about 4 times over with 28 days left.
Yeah, it's called the Libre Renegade. And of course, the trouble with the, you know, stuff being funded, sometimes it gets there and becomes vaporware before you can get it. But it's one of those deals, you pays your money and he takes your chance. You probably, probably the ROC 64 is the more sure deal right now. Huh, okay, I said it wrong. I guess the $35 was for the base 1 gig model. 4 gig model, $70 during the campaign, but retail will be $80. So, okay. Probably the ROC 64 is the more economical option. The ROC 64 also, just sure, I was looking earlier today, has gig Ethernet. And has USB 3. And my final link is a Zero Shell Firewall Distro. Works on ARM and x86. This is supposed to be equivalent to pfSense. And mentions in the article something I've ranted about, that there's a version of pfSense sold on ARM hardware, but there isn't one for download, so you can install it on ARM yourself. Only trouble I see, every one of the boards that it is compatible with is a, you know, a single RJ45 board. In other words, there's only one hardwired Ethernet port on the board. Of course, you can go for the USB Ethernet, point that towards the cloud, it'd probably be plenty good enough. But I was, you know, I would hope maybe they would port this to the Banana Pi router or something like that that has multiple Ethernet ports on it, but doesn't, you know, I think anything that would work on the Banana Pi Pro would work on the router, but there's not a build for either one of them. So, but it's out there for ARM and x86. If anybody tries this, I would appreciate hearing a review. And finally, I just posted a link in on my section for the RPG Claw 2 is picked for the game time during the New Year's Eve show. Because unless you're a subscriber to the mailing list, you're probably not going to see that link. And again, I said they are asking for free will contribution for the developer. I mean, or the developer's asking for a free will contribution. And then you get to download the rules and stuff. I think that's everything I have for this evening.
Nebmeyer, do you have anything else?
No, I don't. I'm running out of gas, quite frankly.
All right. So our next recording date will be January 5th of 2018. Our music is provided by Klaatu and Brome. We want to thank Tony Bemis from the Sunday Morning Linux Review for our web hosting, WordPress support, and our email list server. And we want to thank Delwyn for providing the memo server we use and creating a bot module. So to find our next show recording, all you have to do is in our IRC channel on Freenode, just type in .ns and it'll show you the next recording date. I have been Honky Magoo, and with me was 5150.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Join us in the new year.
And Netminer.
Happy holidays, folks. Take care. Be safe. You know, the usual. Just look forward to hearing from you. And best wishes to everyone in this family season.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I hope to see you on the HPR server for New Year's Eve. Good night. What have you been up to?
Well, I had to have my phone line replaced last Friday. A neighbor decided that the cables going over a piece of ground that he hadn't used in a mile were in his way, so he decided to take them down.
Is this the same neighbor that wants to fight your property line?
Well, I have no driveway because of the way the boundaries are. No, he's not fighting the property line. He's fenced it. Hasn't got around putting the barbed wire on the top, but I've got chain link running up my driveway. But now we have moved the wire well high above his property and out of an area that was questionable for other sorts of interference like grapevine. Grapevines we have around here are monstrous, and now should be good to go. Also, eventually I will be moving my internet service from old wiring upstairs to new wiring or more solid wiring downstairs.
Well, that sounds good.
Well, with laptops and everything centralized, I may actually have some power out internet capabilities. If I can get a UPS, I can power my router, my DSL modem, and a laptop off of internal power, even if the mains go out.
Nice.
Of course, if there's going to be any internet to use after they get done carving up what used to be the internet that we know.
Yeah, I haven't been paying attention to too much of the details about that. What have you heard?
Well, I haven't heard what they're going to do now that the inmates are running the asylum.
I thought the inmates were always running the asylum.
Yes, but they were at least theoretically supposed to give you a fair shake. It's well known that Comcast has not done its fair share of interconnects at any of the major nexuses.
Yep.
However, we may or may not be able to get some satisfaction in the courts. The one thing that you can look at is that Linux is leaner as far as its needs to keep itself supported on the internet compared to those other systems.
That's very true.
My brother ran into... he uses a cellular internet, and he said one evening Microsoft just took over his machine.
Oh, yeah? What did it do?
Well, under Windows 10, consumer editions, Microsoft does the updates when they want.
Right. Like, nothing's better than the stories I heard about people who didn't want to update to 10 yet were forced to, and a lot of people were forced to update at like the worst possible times.
Well, Microsoft wants to also. Microsoft uses your internet service to update other systems.
Right. Spread the wealth.
Now, I haven't seen any checks from Microsoft for saving them internet charges.
It's in the mail. Keep checking the mailbox.
Well, that's why I jumped from... That's one reason I jumped from 7.
From 7?
Well, I had a virus problem, but I jumped from Windows 7 to Linux seriously on a couple of machines before Microsoft generously forced me to jump to 10.
All right, I thought you went from that. I thought that was the reason why you went from 7 to 10. I was confused by that one.
My brother is running Windows 10 on a laptop over cellular internet because he does gaming.
What type of gaming?
Basically EVE Online at the moment, which I guess has reinvented itself as something reasonably efficient.
I don't think I've heard of that.
It's their primary server, as far as I know, is a ginormous one in Iceland.
That's got to make connections a little bit slow, doesn't it?
I don't know. From what I hear, these people, because of they're the test bed for everybody's huge server farms, and they're probably, I don't know what Iceland's connectivity is, but you got to remember, European internet is far better than U.S. internet in general.
Fair enough.
So if they have big hooks to the continent, they may be back. The American stuff could be a minority of their worldwide whatever. I don't know the fiber map well enough to know where Iceland hooks into the continental U.S.
But you said he plays a game called EVE?
Yeah, EVE Online. It's essentially, I guess it's a massive multiplayer, sort of Battlestar Galactica type thing with mining and all kinds of ship and spaceship to spaceship content and all sorts of other stuff. Huge game. Surprisingly, they've reduced the clients from gigabits to, you know, from, it used to be a 20, well, like a 9 gig download for the client side, and they've streamlined it so the server is doing most of the heavy lifting.
Only on Mac and Windows.
Well, contrary to a lot of things we'd like to see, for a lot of the world, there isn't anything else.
Yes, I know, but I like to dream.
Well, you know, you got to have something to run on your Windows VM.
Right. Or reason to have a Windows VM.
Yeah, I'm going to... My machines were built for VMs, but I haven't been using them that way. But I'm going to be working on that. Nice winter project stuff. Well, I had my brother running on private internet access, which is a pretty good VPN provider. But they went from like $40 a year to $70 a month.
Wow.
Well, have you heard if anyone else is going to be around?
I'm trying to think 5150 on Voxer right now, because he put show notes in there. I mean, he at least seems like he had intent to show up.
It would not be the first time that we've played talking heads for the 5150 show. I need to step aside a minute to get some socks on. My feet are getting cold. Also, I may want to look outside to see how bad the snow flurries are up here in south of Boston.
Okay.
I'm back. Canonical's move to snaps may be exactly the wrong thing for the U.S.
Why for the U.S.?
Because a finer-grained upgrade policy will use less internet.
That's an interesting thought.
I mean, last week it was a good idea. This week it's not so much. Also, I've got a 2-gigabyte 16-bit machine that I was going to move to Ubuntu, and I may not do that. I may put it on one of my bigger machines, because if I upgrade to 18.4, I may need more memory space.
Well, they still have the app repository, don't they?
Well, the policy that I heard on 18.4 is that snaps are going to be their primary focus, which makes Linux applications much more Microsoft-like.
Yeah, I think things like snaps and app images should be a good good secondary idea for pushing on applications as opposed to a primary one.
Well, Canonical is going, since everybody's going container happy, they're snapping up the world. By the way, would somebody please explain to me what's the difference between snaps and static linked binaries?
I am not smart enough to answer that question.
20 years, maybe? A binary with all dependencies linked in is a static linked binary.
So yeah, that sounds like a snap.
They were the storage link pigs before? There were storage pigs before, and there are storage pigs today. Also, I ran across an interesting sort of phobia. I have a 1080p TV. However, when I was running 1080p on my Sparky Linux, the upper edges of the application were unusable, like the minimize controls and stuff like that. With Firefox, it was also the file menu and stuff. So both edges were lost.
Yeah, I've run into that problem too. It's let's see. I used to be able to edit the which I don't believe they use anymore, the Xorg file, to be able to resize it in that, to be able to get it to fit the TV. I've done that before, but I don't think that that they use that file anymore. I'm not even sure if that's the right name for the file, because it's been so long since I've done that. But I've had problems too, where I've hooked computers up to TVs, and I've lost edges.
Well, I've got a fairly simple workaround, which should work with virtually any distro. I went from 920, 1080 to 1650, 1050.
Yeah, changing the resolution on the TV, I guess that would work too.
Well, I changed that through Linux, and since my TV thinks it's talking, only has 16 by 9 and doesn't allow you to change any of the settings. So I went to Linux, I went to my display tab and just kicked it back to a 16 by 10 resolution that was just below the 16 by 9. I mean, I got a display that is full 16 by 10. You get a little more it's actually a wider screen, well, a squarer screen, but seems to work pretty good for me. But again, I'm just throwing it out as a potentially useful tip. Also, my main screen on that system is a 1920x1200, which is 16 by 10 anyway, so it means both my screens on that system are now effectively the same form factor.
Nice. Hey, 50.
Yeah, I apologize for my tardiness. About 5 minutes before the hour, I heard some old classmates called and wanted to come see the house, and, you know, they were going to maybe come tomorrow, but I wasn't going to be here tomorrow, so I told them it have to be a quick visit.
That's dedication right there. Sending friends away to hang out with us.
Oh, I think we had a pretty good visit there. I mean, I wish I could show them the house when it was better cleared up. I need to do a couple days work cleaning stuff here.
Has it been cold out your way?
Occasionally, but it's been more unseasonably warm. It was in the 50s today.
We were down in the teens today.
Yeah, it's been pretty chilly. We're getting more white Christmas overnight, although it's just flurrying.
I mean, late November, we were having like 80-degree days.
We had a stint there where it was hanging around between the 50s and 60s, but we definitely didn't see in the 80s.
Well, I thought...
I've seen it bounce around, because I remember buttoning up the house and then having to put window fans back out because it was getting too cold. Getting too hot, rather.
Yeah, well, we had that one week where it was in the 50s and 60s for the most part, and then when it went down to like the 30s for like a good solid week, and then it went back to up to about being like mid to the high 60s again, and it stayed that way for a little while, I believe.
Yeah, I think we may need to retrofit some HPR New Year's links and stuff.
Why? What's wrong with the links we got? So there's on our site, there should be in the news section a full description of everything that's going on, start times and all that stuff, and all the links. They should all be updated.
Well, that might have mentioned last show that, you know, when you came back this week, maybe you could, since you're doing a lot of the lake work on it, you'd like to start with talking about the New Year's show and some of the details.
Sure.
Well, you see, I've been using the show notes raw without, because I'm CC'd to them without going to the website. So I just thought that putting them in the actual honest to goodness show notes might be helpful to people.
Oh, sure.
I don't exactly recall any feedback. Anybody know if we do or not?
Well, I put one in there.
I guess there is some.
Yeah, Kay Wisher put something on the G+ page about Sparky Linux going on to the Raspberry Pi.
That's good news, because that means I'll be able to set up my Raspberry Pis when I get them with the same system that I run on everything else.
Now, does Sparky Linux have... can you run Broadcom wireless chips through Sparky Linux on the install, or do you need to download the B43 cutter to be able to, FW cutter to be able to work, to run Broadcom wireless, or do you know?
I don't know either.
You don't use wireless.
I don't use wireless. When I cut loose my desktop replacement laptop to go up and use wireless, I found the library was closed. That was when my phone lines had been torn down by my neighbor.
See, with the death of 32-bit on some of the major systems, one of the major OSs that seem the distros that seem to be hanging in there with 32 and with everything else is Debian. But the problem is, I'm trying to find a Debian distro that I can automatically be able to, because, I mean, most of my systems seem to have Broadcom wireless chips, which means I need to be able to come down here and plug in just to do the install. And it's not always that easy to come down here to plug in. And I don't have, you know, I don't have my house wired up to be able to plug in upstairs somewhere. Which isn't a horrible idea, but at the moment I don't have that set up.
Can I suggest something?
Suggest away, sir.
Raspberry Pi.
As?
Build a Raspberry Pi 3, and then use the Raspberry Pi 3 as the node that connects to your install machine.
That sounds like an interesting project. I could also just get a USB wireless dongle and carry that around.
Well, I'm just saying, that way, as far as your install of whatever, it's talking to the Raspberry Pi, and the Raspberry Pi talks to your home network with whatever security that you set up.
Right.
Since the Raspberry Pi is essentially a smart dongle, put it with a hard shell case, or a nice external antenna. You could put it in a briefcase and away you go.
All right, so yeah, you're right, that could work. But again, that's about the same as making a Raspberry Pi, about the same as a Wi-Fi dongle, except much smarter.
That's correct, but it also means that you don't have to worry about anybody's drivers.
True.
Also, you're applying more horsepower to the problem. If anything, give the Raspberry Pi its own Wi-Fi dongle.
I was thinking of a more sleeker, simpler. Well, I'm not sure about simpler, but way of just finding a version of Debian that I can use that already has the necessary drivers installed. Or, I mean, there are distros where I've been able to, you know, use the Broadcom chips, you know, without having to go download, any other drivers. I think those were mostly like Ubuntu based And since Ubuntu is going away from 32, that kind of leaves those my machines out in the cold.
That's why I got Sparky on my last effective 32-bitter. Also, a note on bootstrapping. The Sparky CLI installer is a CLI installer. However, it does give you the option of installing a desktop. What I'm saying is the machine that you come out with can be, once you have the core install, it can be expanded to a full Sparky system, singing and dancing and playing the maracas and everything.
Right, but that's true for most. That's kind of like a net install version, where you'd start off with a bare bones system. All you have to do is basically download your desktop environment of choice and I want to say login, but I know that's not right. A window manager, I believe, and then you're kind of off and running.
Well, what I'm saying is the installer for the so-called CLI installer has in it those steps as a way of, at the end, it will install a desktop and whatever.
Well, that's handy.
So the desktop is not, I was pleasantly surprised. I have an old Dell machine which will not boot anything bigger than a standard CD, that is to say, for installations. Once you have it on the hard drive, it will play nice with anything. I've converted it to SCSI. No, SATA. Not fast SATA, but SATA.
So, are we ready to officially start?
Yeah, give me a sec here. So, since I wasn't here last week, I have no problem doing the intro and stuff and hosting.
Works for me.
Yep. I'm no problem being one of the Indians. I just am allergic to feathers of the chief. Also, somewhere around here, somebody has a couple of chickens because we have a roaster that has made himself well known.
Did you say a rooster or a roaster? Because, you know, a roaster would solve that problem.
I was going to say, you wouldn't have much chickens for much longer.
Yeah, well, no, this is definitely a rooster. I have a nice project for someone. Genetically engineer a rooster with a reset button.
You mean like a snooze button?
Yes. When we were putting a phone line in, it went into late afternoon on Friday, and I said, you know, hey, fella, that's sundown, not sun up.
Hey, Google, have rooster crow at 8:30 a.m.
Your alarm call rooster is set for tomorrow at 8:30 a.m.
Well, that wasn't what I'd planned. Did you guys catch that?
I think. Is it going to make a rooster sound tomorrow at 8:30 a.m.?
No, I think I just named my alarm.
So how would you set the snooze on the rooster? Would you throw a boot at it?
Shotgun.
Then I think you need a new rooster.
Well, you could fill the shell with rock salt.
Well, I don't know. Since that's very much in town, I'd have to have one of those TO2 shotguns.
Just get a paintball gun. Make them a different, brighter color every morning.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts On Air and Audio Only Stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it back.